The Care and Feeding of Hobbits, Ruminations on the Little People, by Boromir, Man of Gondor, a Lord of the Rings fan fiction, written and read by Baylor, rated G. Lesson 1. Hobbits Need a Good Night's Sleep. Somewhere in this heap of hobbits is the one who is supposed to relieve me from watch. I just have no idea how to determine which one it is. I bend my knees and crouch near the massive blankets and curls and limbs. Well, let's see. There are a number of hobbit heads here. 1, 2, 3. Where in over heaven's name is the fourth? Or maybe there are four heads here, and I simply cannot differentiate between them. Only the very tops of their curls are showing, as they have pulled blankets and cloaks up over their bodies, from hair-covered toes to foreheads. I lean in a little. "Mary," I hiss, hoping this will produce the desired response. There is no reply from the pile. "Mary," I try again, louder this time. One of the hobbits shifts slightly, and a small hand appears from beneath the blankets. Relieved, I think for a moment that my problem is solved, until the hobbit gives a soft sigh, and I realize that it is just one of them shifting in his sleep. We have been traveling by night, and the thin sunlight illuminating our daytime encampment gives me some assistance. The black curls in the center belong to Frodo, only he has such dark hair. But then on either end there are light brown curls, one set more honey-toned than the other. One of those is certainly Mary, making little Pippin the hobbit missing beneath the blankets, as his chestnut curls are nowhere to be seen. I am not certain, however, which light brown head is Mary and which one is Sam. Finally, I take my best guess and reach out a hand to tap a head. "Mary," I say again. The hobbit rolls from his back to his side, at least so I think from the movement of his head, and groans. "I'm Sam," he says. "Mr. Mary's on the other end." "My apologies, Sam," I say, sorry to have woken him without need. We have gone at a great pace during this first leg of our journey, and I know the little people have struggled to keep up. In truth, I fear poorly waking Mary for watch, though it is his turn, and I would not insult him by taking his duties upon myself. I turn myself toward the other end of the hobbit pile and tap the second light brown head. "Mary," I say with more confidence, and this time I get the desired response. "What?" a distinctly surly voice says. "It's your watch," I whisper, trying not to wake any more hobbits. "All right," the voice says, now sounding more weary than surly, but there is no corresponding movement in the hobbit pile that indicates Mary is getting up. I tap his head again. "Mary, get up," I say. This has a most unexpected result, and I jump backward when a small figure abruptly bolts upright and tosses the covers off its head. "What's happening? Is it time to leave already?" It is still not my relief, but Pippin, astonishingly wide awake as he addresses me. "No," I tell him, catching my breath after the surprise, "and my apologies for waking you. I was just trying to rouse Mary for his watch." "Oh, all right then," Pippin says, and begins pushing the figure beside him out from under the covers, seeming to use both his hands and his feet. "Mary, get up," he says, not at all quietly, and Mary's hands appear to swat at him. The hobbit on the other side of Pippin begins drawing the blankets back around himself. "Who has woken Pippin before it's time to get up?" Frodo demands. "Can't we have a few hours of peace and quiet?" Pippin responds by diverting one hand from bereaving Merry of his covers to poke his other cousin in the rib, rather hard from the looks of it. "All right, I am up, Merry says crossly, spurred into movement. He crawls out from the covers and then stands in front of Pippin with his hands on his hips, scowling thoughtfully. Pippin freezes in place, watching Merry warily. "I have the clear impression that, well, something is about to happen," when Frodo says sharply, "Oh no you don't, lads, I'm sleeping." His hand appears from beneath his reclaimed covers and latches onto Pippin's shoulder. A hard jerk, and Pippin hits the ground with a whump, and then Frodo flicks his wrist, and the youngest hobbit disappears from view beneath a blanket. Merry turns from the hobbit pile. "Thank you, Boromir," he says, his usual even temper apparently back in place. "Everything all right?"
Yes, it's been a quiet watch," I say, rather dazed by the complexity of waking a hobbit for watch. Such a seemingly simple thing.
"Have a good sleep, then," Merry says, perching himself atop a large boulder so he can look about. "Thank you," I say, and then stretch out in my bedroll. These hobbits are curious creatures, I think, just before I go to sleep. I do not know quite what to make of them. Lesson 2, Hobbit Genealogy. Seven faces turn upward toward the boughs of the tree, watching the two figures clamber higher with assured deftness. The elf scowls in displeasure, and I hide a smile at seeing the normally serene elf disconcerted by so small a thing. "I certainly could have retrieved the arrow myself, Aragorn," he says again for good measure. "You certainly could have broken several bones when the tree limb snapped beneath your weight," Aragorn replies levelly, his eyes not leaving the tree. I wonder if he is as nervous about the climbers as I am. The two figures are near the top now, level with the errant arrow, and one of them is inching forward precariously onto the limb the missile is affixed to, while the other one clings to the tree trunk with one hand and his companion's foot with the other. For all that they are so small, I wonder that the delicate branches hold their weight. I am also surprised at their fearless, easy grace in so precarious a place. "I thought hobbits were, disliked heights," Gimli comments. "Well, they aren't something that we terribly relish," Merry replies, feet firmly on the ground, I note. "But Pippin is Altuk, and that clan is less worried by heights than any hobbit you'll find, and Frodo's certainly got enough Took in him to fit that bill as well. I'd rather stay on the ground myself." "Are you not cousins?" I query, somewhat puzzled. "Or do you not have Took blood?" "Well," Merry is watching Pippin yank the arrow from the limb and scoot back to the relative safety of the tree trunk. "My mother is a Took, of course, sister to Pippin's father Paladin, and my paternal great-grandmother was Mirabella Took, one of the old Took's children, so I've certainly got enough Took blood in me. But in practical terms, and especially when it comes to climbing things, I'm a brandybuck, through and through." Everyone has stopped looking at the two hobbits in the tree, and now are looking at Merry. When our gazes turn inquiringly to Sam, he shakes his head and states unequivocally, "Sirs, there is not a drop of Took blood in me, and there isn't enough gold in a dragon's hoard to persuade me to climb around like that." I turn this over in my head. "So, Merry, you and Pippin are first cousins?" He is still watching his kin's downward approach. "Well, yes, but we are also third cousins, descending from the old Took line, as Pippin's great-grandfather Hildengrim was brother to great-grandmother Mirabella." This seems logical, so I proceed, my curiosity piqued. "Is Frodo then cousin to you both from his Took heritage?" "Oh, certainly. Frodo has Took blood, but his mother was a brandybuck, of course, so he and I are related several times over through both lines," Merry replies. "He is first cousin to my father, making him my first cousin once removed, coming down from Gorbodoc and Mirabella. But since Mirabella is also my maternal great-great-aunt,
as well as my paternal great-grandmother, Frodo is also my second cousin once removed, and because Rosa Baggins, one of old Balbo's granddaughters, married Hildengrim Took, we are also third cousins once removed, again on the Took side. I really could not come up with an adequate response to this recitation if my life depended on it. Beside me, Gandalf mutters in my ear, with unseeming delight at my bewilderment, "We will expect you to recount all of that later, Boromir, so I hope you have committed it to memory." Now it seems I have stirred up everyone's interest. "So Frodo is more related to you than to Pippin?" Legolas inquires. "I had thought the two of them more closely related than you and Frodo, as they do favor each other." "Oh, Frodo and Pippin are quite related," Merry assures the elf. "They are third cousins once removed, just as Frodo and I are, from the Took side, down from Rosa and Hildengrim. But they are also second cousins once removed, Pippin's father being Frodo's second cousin, also from the old Took, but through Frodo's Brandybuck side, Mirabella also being one of Durrance's children." "So Frodo is a Baggins from Balbo?" Gimli asks, and Merry gives him a look that borders on exasperation. "Frodo is a Baggins from his father, Drogo, one of Balbo's great-great-grandsons, but more importantly, he is a Brandybuck from his mother, Primella, one of Gorbodok's daughters, and sister to old Rory, my paternal grandfather," he says in a rather affronted voice. "But heredity being as it is, you are right, Legolas, that Frodo ended up looking like a Took." "What is this?" Frodo demands, swinging down from one of the tree's lower branches. "Are you slandering my family tree again, Merry?" "I am doing nothing but raising you in the esteem of our companions by pointing out to them your Brandybuck line," Merry answers. "And it is not my fault you came out looking and behaving like a Took instead of a proper Brandybuck, who would never be caught running along tree branches like a squirrel. And at your age, too." "I thought that was the Baggins in me," Frodo says, dusting off his hands and returning the ill-shot arrow, originally meant as a demonstration to the hobbits, to its chagrined owner. "I seem to recall Bilbo scaling a few trees, more daunting than this, in his day, and at my age." "That was someone else's doing, and no fault of his bloodlines, I am certain," Merry states with a sideways glance at Gandalf. "Merry Doc Brandybuck, I know enough of your family history, Took and Brandybuck, and whatever else may please you, that I would advise you not to go down that path, lest I get the itch to begin telling stories after dinner," the wizard answers in an ominous voice, but I can see his eyes twinkling. "Are you going to tell stories, Gandalf, really?" Peregrine asks, dropping from the tree and landing on all fours like a cat. "I have always wanted to know what happened to Hildenfons and Isengard. Our family records don't say much of anything. Did you know them? Do you know what happened to them? Will you really tell us when we stop for dinner?" Merry is grinning in a way that clearly shows he believes he has got the upper hand over Gandalf in the end, and Frodo is practically bouncing on the balls of his feet with pleasure at the wizard's plight. "Yes, will you, Gandalf? We would love to hear all about your past adventures with other hobbits," the ringbearer says, most certainly aware that he is just egging Pippin on. "You've always had a particular fondness for Tooks, though, haven't you?" "Yes, Gandalf, you did used to come to the Tooks first for everything," Pippin states. "I don't know when the Bagginses became so high in your book. I would have thought a Took would have served you just fine as a burglar. Why ever did you take up with the Bagginses anyway?" "Yes, Gandalf," Frodo says, all big blue eyes and deceptively innocent expression. "How could you ever tire of taking Tooks with you on adventures? I'd have thought you'd want to associate with hobbits more connected to the Thane than we lowly Bagginses." Frodo and Merry are grinning broadly, and I wonder at their boldness in taunting the wizard in a manner I would never dream of. Even Sam is hiding a smile as he fusses with Bill's baggage. But Pippin is looking up at Gandalf with sincere green eyes and an earnest, open face. "But you wouldn't ever tire of the Tooks, would you, Gandalf?" he asks anxiously. "I mean, really, you just chose Bilbo because you knew he was a Took deep down, right?" "But of course, Peregrine," Gandalf says, seizing his chance for a graceful extraction. He lays a gnarled hand on Pippin's head. "I knew that Bilbo could be the finest hobbit in the Shire if only I could wake up a little more Took in him. And my plan turned out quite well in the end, don't you think?" Pippin nods, and then asks, "So will you tell us about Hildenfons and Isengard at supper? You do know what happened to them, don't you? I mean, You know all those types of things, don't you? I am amused and a little touched by Peregrine's innocent assumption of Gandalf's omnipotence, but Gandalf seems a mite wearied by it. Perhaps he has more familiarity with the young hobbit's persistence than I do. We will see, we will see, Gandalf answers with a sigh. Come now, we have squandered enough time on Master Greenleaf's archery lesson. Come along, all of you, we must continue. As we ready ourselves to march, I hear Pippin saying to his second cousin once removed, and his third cousin once removed, Frodo, do get Gandalf to tell us about Hildenfons and Isengard tonight. I know he must know what happened to them, and I have wanted to know for so very long. Aragorn comes over to me and hands me some supplies to affix to my pack. If you are having trouble keeping that all straight, he whispers, just remember, Sam is Frodo's gardener. Not only are these hobbits the strangest beings I have ever traveled with, their oddities seem to rub off on their companions, I think as I follow after a grinning Aragorn. Lesson 3. Hobbit Grooming. Well, at least try to comb it or something, Merry is saying to Pippin in exasperation. The object of his exasperation has just finished what I suppose you could call his ablutions after breakfast, or supper, or whatever you would term it when you sleep all day and walk all night, before settling down to rest. However, there is still a broad stripe of dirt across his forehead, and his hair, the cause of Merry's consternation, is sticking up in the front, and matted into a snarled mess in the back. It's fine, Pippin says dismissively, then tries to move away when Merry grabs him by the collar and begins squashing down the gnarled curls with his free hand. Stop that, Pippin commands, squirming, but Merry has a firm grasp on him and seemingly some experience with restraining a wriggling Pippin and does not relent. Finally, though, he heaves a defeated sigh and releases his now surly-looking cousin. I think you just need a haircut, Merry says decisively. Merry, no one out here cares what my hair looks like, Pippin replies, now sounding somewhat exasperated himself. I have noted before the different levels of care the hobbits put into their appearance. Merry and Frodo do their best to stay as clean and tidy as possible, from their hair to their faces to their clothes. Sam is always careful to keep his face and hands washed and generally runs a brush through his hair once a day, but all in all does not appear to give a lot of thought to how he looks. But Pippin, I do believe, would happily roll about in the dirt and let his hair turn into a rat's nest and never give it another thought. Frodo has come up beside his cousins and joins Merry in looking at Pippin distastefully. Merry's right, he says. You need a haircut. You look disgraceful. Pippin puts his lower lip out in a little pout, making me choke back a sympathetic chuckle, and then reaches his hands up to mush down his wayward locks, to little avail. You two don't look so grand yourselves, you know, he mumbles sullenly. Merry and Frodo eye each other critically, and then nod at the same time a moment later. Right, so we all need haircuts, Merry says. I don't suppose we have a pair of scissors. Sam has been fumbling about in his pack, and at that moment he materializes beside the cousins, holding a small pair of sewing scissors. He clears his throat. Didn't think about needing them for haircuts, but I figured they might come in handy for something, he says. Sam, you're just a marvel, Frodo says admiringly, and soon he is seated on the ground, with Sam standing behind him wielding the scissors. Merry stands nearby to watch, while Pippin, still sulking a bit, plops down on the ground to observe out of the corner of his eye. There was no discussion about who would cut Frodo's hair. Sam simply took up his place behind Frodo, and no one questioned it. I find this a curious thing, but deduce that it must have to do with social standing. I suppose that, as Frodo's servant, it is assumed that Sam will be the one to cut his hair. But I also find it curious that everyone assumed that Frodo would be the first to receive his haircut. Surely not because he is the ring-bearer. I am watching them. Sam is very intent on the task at hand and seems to be somewhat skilled at it, and puzzling over this turn of events when Gandalf joins me and lights his pipe. Frodo is the eldest cousin, you know, he comments after a moment. I turn to him, furrowing my brow in puzzlement. I beg your pardon, I ask. That is why he gets to go first, Gandalf clarifies, answering the question I had not asked. Next to class distinction, seniority in the family line is the most important factor in Hobbit society. I was wondering, I replied. They all seemed agreed upon how to proceed, but I was not certain of their line of reasoning. Gandalf puffs a bit on his pipe, before adding, Hobbits, in general, are very concerned with social order and the proper way of doing things. Do not forget that the three cousins over there also are members of the highest echelon of Hobbit society, so these habits are even more ingrained in them. It is strange to me to think of Frodo, Merry, and Pippin as elite members of their society, but I know from our conversations that this is true. In fact, if I understand correctly, Pippin will someday inherit the most important title in the Shire, and Merry an only slightly less important one. And I have long noted the markings of the upper class in their clothing, especially compared to Samwise. All three cousins wear clothing of expensive material, with detailed needlework, while Sam's clothing is plainer, served by simple, if well-done, stitching. Sam soon declares Frodo finished, and takes care to brush off the stray hair clippings from his master's jacket before letting him stand back up. Thank you, Sam, Frodo says, running his fingers through his now tidier-looking locks. I feel much more like myself now. He turns to look at Merry. Your turn. Shall I cut it? Sam clears his throat. I'd be happy to do it, Mr. Frodo, sir. That is, if Mr. Merry is willing, he says, and gives them a small, bashful smile. Merry and Frodo both seem surprised and pleased at the offer. So it is that Merry soon has taken the seat just vacated by his cousin. This behavior I understand, coming from a society that has class distinctions in servants. Sam is Frodo's servant, not Merry's, and therefore it is not entirely appropriate for him to offer his services to another member of a higher class without his master first volunteering him to do so. But under these circumstances, it is a kindness that I am certain is appreciated by both the master and his cousin. At any rate, all three seem pleased with the arrangement, and Merry soon is looking more like the chipper young gentle hobbit I met in Rivendell. Merry having his hair cut has enticed Pippin out of his sulk, and he joins Frodo in watching with interest. Once Sam has finished and meticulously brushed down Merry's jacket, he hands the scissors over to Merry, who takes Sam's spot as Pippin sits down in front of him. This is all done with a number of words of thanks and meaningless comments, but again with no discussion on how next they are going to proceed. Indeed, Pippin does not even join in the conversation, just settles himself and then scrunches up his face as Merry begins to tug at the tangles in the back. I suppose they all know that no one but Merry is allowed to cut Pippin's hair, I say to Gandalf in a low voice. He chortles a bit before replying, I dare say so, though if Merry were not here, I imagine it would fall to Frodo. But if I were the wagering type, I would say young Peregrine has only ever had his hair cut by two people, his nurse and Merry. Hobbits are quite indulgent toward their offspring, and that rapscallion is the beloved baby of both the Took and Brandybuck clans. He has never been handled with anything but the utmost care in all his life. After watching for a bit, I decide it is just as well that someone with experience is wielding a sharp instrument near Pippin's head. He is always fairly restless, but now is doing his best to hold very still, clearly knowing better than to peeve Merry during this process. However, it seems like every so often he cannot help himself and twitches a mite, or shifts just a little. Fortunately, something alerts Merry to each movement just before it happens, and he moves the scissors away and patiently waits for Pippin to settle again. I am absolutely fascinated by this, and even Gandalf seems to be watching with keen interest. I cannot for the life of me work out what it is that lets Merry know Pippin is about to move, and in what direction, but their motions are as choreographed as an intricate dance. I also note that Merry often combs his fingers reassuringly through Pippin's curls, an action that seems to soothe Pippin quite a bit. Still, the youngest cousin's knees are bouncing impatiently by the time Merry declares him fit to be seen again and releases him. Once Pippin bounds up, I note that Merry has simply chopped off the gnarled mess in the back, and that Peregrine's hair is now shorter than I have ever seen it. This does not escape Pippin either, when he reaches up to examine the result with his fingers. I hear Gandalf give a small noise that I believe is a smothered chortle. Mary, it's too short, Pippin complains, but Mary shakes his head at him, unperturbed. No, it isn't, he states. This will keep it from getting so snarled, since you seem to have forgotten how to use a brush. It also means I won't have to cut it again for a while, so be grateful. Besides, your hair grows so quickly anyway. It will be too long again before any of the rest of ours will. Pippin looks a little mournful as he touches what remains of his curls, but does not complain anymore, and joins his cousins in turning to look at Sam. Come on then, Sam. One good turn deserves another, Mary says, holding aloft the scissors. I'll cut yours for you. Sam flushes red. Oh, Mr. Mary, really, mine is fine, I'm sure. There's no need for you to do that. Oh, no, Sam. If I have to get all of my hair hacked off, so do you, Pippin says decisively. Let me cut Sam's hair, Mary. I haven't had a turn yet at being barber. This suggestion brings a look of stricken horror to the faces of the other three hobbits, and Frodo quickly pipes up to put an end to that thought. I think not, Peregrine. I am the eldest, and I haven't had a turn yet either. I shall cut Sam's hair, he says with an amused smile. Now Sam is practically squirming with discomfort. I understand his dilemma without Gandalf explaining it to me. It is completely inappropriate for a master to cut a servant's hair, yet if Sam refuses, he will be going against his master's wishes and will offend him. Frodo takes note of the reluctance on Sam's face and coaxes him a bit by saying, Come on, Sam, I promise not to butcher it. I cut Mary's many times when he was a little lad, and you know I used to cut Bilbo's for him. Come along, have a seat. So it is with the red face that Sam slowly, reluctantly, sits down in the spot Pippin has just vacated and watches as Mary turns the scissors over to Frodo. This haircut is delivered in utter silence, Sam's look of discomfort never fading. Yet it is Frodo's face I am watching. He is intent on his task, yet has the same look of tender care on his face that Mary's had while he cut Pippin's hair. Sam's devotion to Frodo is blaringly apparent to anyone spending more than a few moments in their company, yet now I can see that Frodo is no less devoted to his servant. It is a rare blessing for both master and servant to share this type of bond, and I am suddenly grateful that the ring-bearer has this good fortune. He will need every small advantage he can find before this quest is over, I suspect. Soon Frodo is finished with his self-appointed task and proudly examines his handiwork. Much better, he declares, then looks about at all of his companions in satisfaction. I do believe I recognize you all again, he says happily, then puts his fingers in Pippin's curls, tugging a bit. Mary, these are a little short, he comments. I told you, Pippin mumbles, still sounding rather put out. Mary grins good-naturedly at Frodo. I say they are just fine, and since I am the one who will have to comb through them when they are an abysmal mess, I think I should decide how long they are. Frodo sighs. Very well, he replies. I don't wish to take over that task, so I will not criticize. And I can comb my own hair, Pippin adds, still in an aggrieved mumble. Of course you can, Frodo soothes, finger combing the locks in question until they meet his satisfaction. Are all of you ready for bed, then? They all are, and soon have created the by now familiar mound of bedding and warm hobbit bodies, out from which I can only see the tops of four sets of now shortened curls.